Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome back to the Prospect Interview, the podcast where we speak to the brightest minds of today and talk about the ideas that matter in politics, arts, society, and science. My name is Samir Rahim. This week, we're talking to science writer Philip Ball about the life and work of Stephen Hawking. A new biography by Charles Cief claims that the celebrated scientist was overrated and indeed an aggressive self-promoter. How true is the accusation? Philip reviewed the biography for Prospect and joins us to talk about the human side of Hawking, the dark side of celebrity, what the famous scientist actually believed, and how we treated him is related to how we see issues of disability. Phil, thanks for joining us on the Prospect podcast.
Pleasure, thank you.
If there's one contemporary figure who sums up the achievements of modern science, then it's Stephen Hawking. He was probably the best known scientist in the world before his death in 2018. There was an Oscar-winning film in 2014, I think, called The Theory of Everything. Numerous appearances on adverts and television programs and documentaries. And we're going to go into whether his fame was, as it were, deserved or not. But first, Phil, let's just take Hawking the physicist. What were his main achievements?
Well, he was working in the area of general relativity. This is the theory that Einstein drew up in the early part of the 20th century to understand gravitation. And for many decades, actually, after Einstein came up with the theory, people didn't quite know what to do with it. It was mathematically difficult, and for a long time it kind of languished, and physicists did other things. And it was really in the 1960s, so this was when Hawking was an undergraduate and then starting his graduate career in the early 60s. It was really at that time that physicists started to get back interested in general relativity and what it could tell us about gravitation in the cosmos. So that's ranging from the theory of how stars form and what happens to stars to the whole big picture of the whole universe or the whole cosmos. What does general relativity tell us about the nature of that? So this was a time when we just started to understand that the universe was expanding, that the Big Bang was real. That was actually something that was discovered in the 1960s. And this completely transformed our idea of what the universe was like, that it was no longer seen as this sort of static, eternal space, but that it was something that had a beginning and that was growing from that beginning. And general relativity was the theory that could tell us how that happened. So this was the area that Hawking was working in. And in particular, what he began doing in his early graduate career was looking at the question of what are called singularities. And these are, I mean, they happen everywhere in physics. It's basically a singularity is something where the equation blows up and things become infinite. And in general relativity, that was known to happen in principle when a star collapses under its own gravity. if the star is big enough, that collapse seems to have no end point to it. So the star just shrinks and shrinks by its own gravity because it's run out of fuel, so it doesn't have the energy to sort of keep itself expanded. And the idea was that eventually it shrinks to nothing. This is what general relativity said, that you get a black hole. This is what a black hole is. It's basically a star that's collapsed to an infinitely small point, and it still has its gravity, but all the mass is condensed into this point. And there was a controversy around that time of whether this could really happen to stars, because it seemed like an absurd idea, really, that you could get, you know, an infinite density of matter. But around this time, Roger Penrose, who won last year's Nobel Prize in Physics for this work, he showed that these singularities in collapsing stars were real. They really could happen. And this was the area that Hawking started to work in, particularly in conjunction with Penrose for a time. So the two of them worked on singularities in black holes, but they also realized that the same mathematics could be applied to understand the universe, to understand the Big Bang. That in fact, what a Big Bang looked like, this expanding universe, was rather like a black hole in reverse, or a collapsing star in reverse. And so they were using these ideas too to try to understand cosmology, to understand how the universe began and how it would evolve. So that was really the area in which Hawking throughout his career made his really important contributions.
Yes, and you mentioned Roger Penrose there, who's a very well-respected physicist, you know, written books himself, but, you know, his status in the popular imagination is not really anything like Stephen Hawking's, you know, and why is that?
Well, that's everything in a way, I think, hinges on that question. You know, not just for Penrose, although Penrose's work was in, you know, many respects, as the Nobel shows, was equally as important as Hawking's. But there were many other people, increasingly so from the 1970s onwards, working in these sorts of areas. And this is just one area of physics. And there were plenty of other, you know, physicists who are doing amazing work and, of course, have been winning Nobels every year. So why is it that Hawking was singled out? And to my mind, there are some, I guess, some disturbing aspects to this question, because I think it has to be said that the main reason why that seems to be so was the public interest that was generated around the disability that he had, the condition that he had, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis or motor neuron disease, that, you know, throughout his life, since it was diagnosed in his early days as a graduate student, gradually robbed Hawking of his ability to move, and then eventually his ability to speak. And, you know, he ended his life in this almost entirely paralyzed state, communicating through his voice synthesizer and communicating by computer. And I think it's undeniable that it was the public fascination with that predicament, really, and the fact that it was someone who was in such an extreme predicament, but that nevertheless was exploring these completely, I mean, literally cosmic, you know, mind-boggling ideas in physics. It was somehow that dichotomy that really seemed to generate the public interest around Hawking, and that was really what I think what allowed A Brief History of Time to take off when it was published in 1988. So, you know, after that, Hawking became a household name. The book was obviously phenomenally successful around the world. And it was, it's still puzzling to, you know, if you look at that book now, it did a good job of explaining the sort of work that Hawking was doing, but no more so than the sorts of books that plenty of other people were writing on this topic or have written since on this topic. So there was nothing in that to distinguish Hawking from other people who were both doing the scientific research and popularizing it. So it was somehow this fascination, and I think this discomfort that existed publicly around Hawking's condition, Hawking's disability, that played a huge role in creating the kind of persona. And, you know, I think it really was a persona, a myth, really, a mythical figure that Hawking became.
Yeah, my edition of A Brief History of Time, there's quite a prominent picture of Hawking on the front cover. And I wonder whether we can ask the difficult question of how much he was complicit in the process you just described.
Oh, I think he was absolutely complicit in it. But I think it would be unfair to hold that against him in some ways, because, you know, he was, I think it's very clear that he was someone who enjoyed fame, enjoyed the public profile he had. And why should he not? Plenty of people do. I guess what feels a little bit harder to negotiate and to, you know, to figure out how we should think about this. I suppose what it seems is whether there was some complicity in the notion that, I think what it comes down to is that people were fascinated by how it was that someone with this sort of disability in a wheelchair could, to put it bluntly, and I think we need to, could be so intelligent. I think what it always seemed to reveal to me was this discomfort we still have, or this sort of cognitive dissonance we still have, and obviously should not have, but clearly do, with the notion that someone with a disability of this sort that renders it, you know, very hard and eventually impossible for them even to speak, that someone like that can have such a high degree of intellect. And I think that's the issue for me that just hasn't been probed enough. Because to me, what happened to Hawking reveals this discomfort in society that we still have, or this struggle we have to reconcile those two considerations, that someone can have this kind of degree of disability and yet still be such a brilliant physicist.
If anyone remembers anything from that book, he talks about finding a theory of everything. And in his resonant phrase, it's, you know, knowing the mind of God. And there's certainly a sort of sage-like aspect to Hawking, wasn't there? The idea that this guy might have really all the answers. And we're not just talking scientific answers, we're talking the answers to much bigger questions. He certainly ventured beyond his specific area of physics, and he commenting on all sorts of things.
Well, I think this is another aspect of his persona. The fact that he had this disability meant that he became so much more of a kind of blank screen on which we could project all kinds of fantasies. And in some ways that became, you know, all the more uncomfortable, because Hawking was someone who was quite happy to pronounce on areas in which he wasn't a specialist at all. And what did seem to happen was that there was a complicity, I think probably involving the scientific community, but much more in the sort of public arena, a complicity in creating this kind of guru, you know, someone who was portrayed as having all the answers to all the questions, whereas it was very clear, and, you know, his scientific colleagues, I sometimes made no bones about this, that he wasn't someone who particularly knew, well, he certainly didn't know anything much about, for example, artificial intelligence or extraterrestrial intelligence. These were two areas that he, you know, was very vocal on in later in life. And this did create problems, because every pronouncement of his was given such weight, a weight that certainly wasn't justified and would not have been given to the pronouncements of anyone else venturing outside their field of expertise and to make these, you know, these general statements that he did. And I think sometimes we saw, you know, that did run into problems. So when he talked about the mind of God, it was clearly a, you know, rhetorical phrase that he figured would sound good, and it caught the public imagination. There was nothing profound in that. There was certainly nothing theologically profound in that. In fact, you know, famously, Hawking had no time for theology or anything religious. It was the same when, in a later book, a book that he co-authored, he said that he had this phrase, philosophy is dead. He was basically saying, you know, now the questions that philosophy used to ask, we have to turn to science, and particularly to physics, to answer. Which, again, seemed, you know, a fairly naive thing to say, and didn't seem to come from any great understanding of philosophy, but again was given this incredible weight, and people were, you know, debating, philosophers were responding to what he could mean by this, where it was really a throwaway comment that I think he recognised would be catchy and would, you know, bring attention.
Just to defend him a little bit, I mean, people who are elevated to these statuses with, you know, come out of their fields and become these great figures, often they aren't necessarily, you know, as it were, the best people in that field. But he did certainly inspire lots of people. There's lots of public interest in science. You know, you say if he said something, people were more interested in it than, you know, if another scientist has said it. So he did give a public face to what, as you say, is often quite difficult physics.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't want any of this to detract from what was, without doubt, a stellar scientific career. And I think it's equally true, you're quite right, Samir, to say that, you know, he was in many ways instrumental to bringing people into science and into this particular area of science who wouldn't have necessarily had an interest otherwise. So, you know, when he gave the Reith lectures a few years ago, he clearly had a huge audience for that reached way beyond the kind of audiences that most scientific figures, scientists and popularizers of science could hope to command. And I think that on the whole, that has to be a good thing. It feels like we have to be a bit more hesitant when what comes with that is a kind of false authority, you know, on areas where he wasn't an expert. But I think it's absolutely true to say that, you know, he did a great deal for raising public interest in science. And I think it has to be acknowledged that he did a great deal for raising awareness about his condition, about motor neuron disease and about disability in general. You know, he famously featured in the opening ceremony of the Paralympics in the UK. So, you know, there were definitely good things that came out of the public profile he had.
One of the more uncomfortable passages in your review for us is when you talk about his relationship with his collaborators, people who helped him write Brief History of Time, people who co-authored scientific papers, and his sort of lack of acknowledgement of that. And in some cases, with much younger colleagues, determination to sort of trump them, as it were, and almost in a way take away their achievements.
Well, you know, I do wonder whether this is an aspect of the kind of collusion that sometimes went on in the scientific world, because it's by no means unusual for people to be begrudging of their competitors or people who have rival ideas. And it's sadly not unusual for more senior figures to not give adequate credit to more junior ones, to junior collaborators. I mean, I think the norm, I should say, is quite the opposite, that, you know, in general, more senior figures bend over backwards to give credit to young people who really need it more than they do. But nevertheless, it did seem striking to me, and we're talking here about the Charles Steeves biography of Hawking, which really goes into these details. And it was, although I'd heard some of those stories before, it was striking to me how many of them there were, and how strongly sometimes he opposed and almost campaigned against younger people who had ideas that seemed to challenge some of his own. I mean, that included some of his students. When, you know, some of the ideas, the speculative ideas he had, if students weren't coming up with work that seemed to validate those ideas, then he wasn't happy. And if some of them came up with work that seemed to contradict them, he really wasn't happy. And there was one instance in particular with one of his students, who was a student for a while, where Hawking, you know, almost tried to get him drummed off his graduate course because of he didn't like the results that this poor chap was coming up with, because they seemed to conflict. And the picture that seemed to emerge from that was of someone who was less interested sometimes in seeming to find out whether his ideas were right, and more interested in finding people and ideas and work that would confirm them. And that, again, isn't unusual in science, but it's not a good look. And the you know, the number of times that it happened with Hawking must leave you wondering whether, you know, this was a kind of a personality trait that sometimes might have compromised his integrity as a scientist and his ability to give credit to others.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since his death in 2018, there's been a sort of almost canonization of Hawking. And you cite an example of apparently there's a gold watch inlaid with wooden discs taken from Hawking's desk on sale for 19 grand, almost like a sort of a shard of Christ's true cross. And I wonder whether, as traditional, maybe religious figures and even political figures, their authority has faded in the West. We do turn to scientists, Hawking, but also you could even say figures like, David Attenborough, perhaps even Chris Whitty, to provide scientific certainty, but also a greater kind of wisdom. Are scientists now fulfilling the role that were fulfilled by others in the past?
Well, I think that has some truth in it, definitely. I think Hawking, in this respect, as in pretty much every other, was unusual in the extent to which that happened. And it really is, something like a canonization, as you say. I mean, he was, there is a tombstone for him in Westminster Abbey. And I think it's true that, since his death, there has been this sort of aura created even more around him. And I think it's one that Hawking himself was quite happy to see happen and probably encouraged in some ways. So he never missed a chance to remind people that he was born exactly 300 years after Galileo died. So he was, very happy to have his name linked to another figure who has himself actually been canonized. The way that Galileo is now regarded is quite out of proportion to what he actually said and did. I think Stephen Hawking was very happy to see this happen. I think in general, and actually this is, there's no one that this is more true of than Roger Penrose. In general, scientific figures withdraw. They run a mile from that sort of thing. They really don't want to be seen as these oracles. So that's really where Hawking was different. And, there have been other cases of Nobel laureate. Hawking never won a Nobel, but there have been other cases of Nobel laureates that have been elevated to this position and have quite happily used that stage to proclaim on in areas where they really have no expertise. But I think that this was something that, that Hawking was quite happy to do. On the whole, I think, in areas like, as I say, the future of AI and the prospects for extraterrestrial intelligence, that, it's not going to do great harm, perhaps, to the public discourse to have someone saying the things he did without a great background of knowledge. But nevertheless, there are real hazards when this is allowed to happen and when people, indulge it. There have been Nobel laureates in the past. I mean, James Watson, is one who won the Nobel Prize for his work on DNA and has now fallen from grace because he was quite happy to proclaim on issues of race and intelligence and the genetic component of that in ways that are now clearly seen as racist. So, that when that sort of thing happens, it can do great harm to public debate on a sensitive issue. I don't think Hawking ever went near anything like that, but it shows just what sort of hazards there can be when a figure is given this sort of status.
And were you worried, you know, writing this review and previous work you've done on Hawking, that people would come at you for sort of taking down a sort of scientific god?
Well, I felt this book review allowed me to be the messenger, and so I could sort of take some refuge in that. You know, I frankly will admit that I was glad that Charles Seaf had written this book, because I had felt for a long time that these kinds of issues were being swept under the rug, and that there was a kind of refusal, it seemed to me, to really face the difficult questions about social attitudes to disability that Hawking's status was raising. And so, you know, I was glad to see that aired. And also the, you know, as I say, I'd heard some of these stories about how unfair Hawking had sometimes been to younger people with conflicting ideas. And it was, I think, valuable to have that brought into the open. I think also it was good that Charles Seaf looked a little bit into questions about Hawking's. My another concern is that Hawking, when he pronounced on things like philosophy and religion, it seemed to be on the basis of no real knowledge or, you know, reading in about them at all. And I didn't feel that was particularly healthy for public debate either. So I was glad that, you know, he brought that into the open a bit more. So, yeah, I wasn't too nervous that I was going to be seen as the one who was saying these things rather than reporting on them. But I was glad to have the opportunity to air them.
Bill, it's a terrific piece, and thank you so much for your thoughts.
Thank you.
And that's all from us. Thank you for joining us this week. You can read Philip's full article, The Problem with Deifying Stephen Hawking, on the Prospect website. Goodbye, stay safe, and see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.